Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner for Sunday, May 15th, 2011. I'm Sam Minter. Yvonne Bo is here as usual. Hello, Yvonne.
Hello.
Stuff.
You don't sound too excited.
You know, I'm just, this is a recurring theme for, the last few months. And, basically the bottom line is I'm still like, we're still like passing diseases around the household, So somebody's always like, as soon as somebody gets better, somebody else starts getting sick. And it's just like a cold kind of thing. It's not like, we're bleeding out of our eyes or anything, but it's still like annoying. I think right now, Brandy's just starting to get better. So of course I'm just starting to get it again. And then there, there are allergies going on and those kinds of things too. And it's still like, I'm still in the phase, like, Alex is heading rapidly towards two, but we're still in the phase where sleep is suffering. Like, sleep is nowhere near what it was, before there was, a baby / toddler in the house, So, like, I'm just always tired. Always. No matter what is going on, no matter what, is good, bad, indifferent in the world, I'm always tired. So is Brandy. It's just like, it's just a way, her probably more so than I am, but to be honest, I've got these lovely sleep patterns. I'm averaging probably around 6 hours a night, which isn't that bad, I guess. I maybe a little under six sometimes, but averaging around there. But the thing is the distribution. It's like, on weeknights, it's probably like 4 hours a night. Four, maybe five on a good night. Okay. And then, on Saturday, I'll like, Saturday and Sunday, mainly Saturday. Saturday, I'll try to make up for it some. And then Sunday's not that long either. So it's like, I may manage the 6 hour average, but it's a little extra on Saturday and like, less the rest of the week. Yeah. So it's like, anyway, and this will probably still go on like another year or two. So we'll see how it goes. I should say it's not just Alex. I also have a work schedule now that's like different than it had been before, in that several days a week, I think I've mentioned this before, I have 8 a.m. meetings, to like video conference with people in Europe. And, and that just requires, like, my normal body clock. I'm a night person. I am not a morning person. So, like, midnight is a time of day that I am almost always up at midnight. I am fairly frequently up at 1 a.m. If it wasn't for a meeting at work, I would never see 8 a.m. on a conscious basis. It just wouldn't happen. But because I do, I have to get up earlier. And so, I'm still, usually everyone, I've started sometimes getting to bed a little bit earlier, but like, I'll be up at midnight, 1 a.m. and then have to like, be up and starting to get ready for the day at 6, And so that's what does it. Yeah.
I mean, I will say that, right now I have been, because of the schedule of my current, my new job, I have been going to sleep significantly earlier than I used to. I have just forced myself to, because I'm to bed by usually 11, okay, which I never used to. It's because normally I'm waking up freaking 5:30, 6 in the morning in order to get ready to go to freaking work, which I never used to do. I can understand your
I've been getting to bed a little bit earlier, but it's difficult, because you have a whole like cycle that's normal, and it's not just me, it's the whole family and when things are happening, and like, if everybody else is still up and doing things and it's like, 9:30 and I'm like, I'm going to bed, it's like, you're missing out on stuff too. I don't know. So anyway, we have an actual show for you. So
yes,
our agenda You know, we were talking Bin Laden last week, so we didn't get to anything on this. But the Republican race is starting to shape up a little bit. So we got a few Republican candidates. We had a Republican debate. We had a few people announcing they're running, a few people announcing they're not running. So interesting stuff there. We have some flooding on the Mississippi. Yvonne has an update on Android sales and people's reaction to that, specifically Android tablet sales. Over the last few weeks, there have been a number of data breaches at various companies. And I wanted to mention just in passing, even though nobody seems to care, the War Powers Act and how it relates to what's going on in Libya.
The War Powers what? The what? The War Powers
Act.
Okay. I didn't know we had such a thing. Anyway. All right. Okay.
Okay. Anyway, so let's get started. Shall we start with the good old Republicans?
Yeah, let's go to the Republicans. All right. We got a whole bunch of them jumping into the fray this week. So what do you think that all of a sudden all these people decided to announce this week?
Well, I think part of it is, you know, we did have that first debate, although it was sort of right. Like a bunch of second-tier candidates for the most part.
Right.
And, you know, it's just getting late. I mean, at some point you have to just do stuff. I don't know. I don't know why this week. I mean, but it's sort of, I think that we're in the process where people have to start raising their money. People have to start getting their names out there. I mean, you know, this is the latest start we've had in a while. I mean, every other presidential season for as long as I can remember, every time people were like, this starts earlier every time, you know, and this
That's right.
And this time, no. Like, for the longest time, we've been like, where is everybody? You know, there have been a lot of people right. talking about the fact that they might want to. There are people speculating and, you know, but, yeah, nobody actually showing up and saying, yep, I'm running for president. I guess we had a few people like Kane, not McCain. I think it's Herman Kane, right? The founder of Godfather's Pizza.
I didn't know that one was running. Really?
Yes, he was like one of the first ones to actually announce. You know.
So there's going to be free pizza campaign policy or something, I guess.
Something like that. He's like okay. He's like one of your sort of extremist fringe candidates who nobody expects to actually go anywhere. But, mm-hmm. you know, so let's see who all was, in that debate. Let me open up a quick link.
You're gonna find out who the people were in that debate, because I have no, I don't, I mean, I remember that.
I mean,
the got canceled.
Well, no, this is the one that got canceled. It turns out it was uncanceled because they ended up having people.
Right, they canceled it, and then I remember that they uncanceled it. I remember that. Yes.
Let's see who we have here. We have Ron Paul, of course, who ran last right. time and has announced he is running again. We okay. had Herman Cain, who is the guy we were just talking about, Godfather's Pizza. We had Tim Pawlenty. Who was the former governor of Minnesota, and of this batch that was in this first debate, is the only one that people actually consider, you know, a serious contender, to be honest.
Okay.
And then we had Rick Santorum, our friend Rick Santorum.
Oh, boy, buddy. Yeah, I know. I saw that frickin' Santorum. My God, Jesus Christ.
And then
I thought he was dead or something. I mean, really?
And then we had former New Mexico governor Gary Johnson.
Gary Johnson.
Gary Johnson.
Yeah. These all sound so unexciting. I mean, really.
One interesting thing. I know you read some coverage, but didn't actually watch the debate. And the debate was on Fox News, and you know, I'm sure very few people actually listened to the whole thing. Of course, I DVR'd it and did watch it. One of the interesting things was out of these five people, you know, there was Ron Paul, of course, but then also Johnson is also of this sort of libertarian bent. Both of them were sort of anti-war, government should do less stuff kind of viewpoint. And, you know, Republicans in general give lip service to the small government thing, but really only mean it in certain areas. But both of these two were fairly consistent on that point. Ron Paul, as usual, was like, off the deep end in terms of the Fed and gold and stuff like that. Johnson was actually kind of interesting there. And it's just interesting that they were actually, on the stage in a debate like this. Having said that, only one of these guys is potentially, really going to be serious going on. But at least that's the conventional wisdom so far. But then there's all the people who weren't there. Mitt Romney wasn't there. Donald Trump wasn't there. Right. Mike Huckabee wasn't there. Newt Gingrich wasn't there. Right. Sarah Palin wasn't there. All of these are additional people that people have been talking about in terms of potentially being in the field. Now, this week, Newt Gingrich announced he was in. Mike Huckabee announced he was out. Donald Trump's polls have been falling, through the floor. He still hasn't made any official announcement one way or another. Mitt Romney had a big speech where he tried to talk about his health care plan and why the fact that it was just like Obama's didn't disqualify him to be a Republican candidate for president. Sarah Palin's kind of been disappearing too. So
I think that one of the things is that, so you have all these guys that jumped in, I think that what you see is, that the Republicans just aren't really excited about any of these freaking people at all. Period.
Well, yeah. This is seeming like a wide open race right now. People are talking about Mike Huckabee, if he was in, was expected to win Iowa. He won Iowa last time around, and has was really popular among evangelical Christians because he is one. Now he's out. Everyone's saying, okay, this means Iowa is wide open. No one has any freaking idea. Another one I should mention that people have talked about is John Huntsman, who was I forget exactly what he was. He's from Utah, I believe. I forget if he was a governor or senator or what. But Obama appointed him as ambassador to China, and now he's reportedly resigned that post in order to potentially run for president. I think you're right. I mean, what's going on here? 538.com, which is now part of the New York Times, blah, 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 has done a number of initial polling-based forecast on all of these guys. Let's see, this came out May 11th, so a few days back. And you look at all this stuff, and, their bottom line, skip to the bottom, the aggressive model, nomination odds, summary of all models. So, basically, his predictions, and this was before Huckabee announced he wasn't running, was number one choice, but with only a 27% chance, Mitt Romney, then Mike Huckabee, Tim Pawlenty, Newt Gingrich, Sarah Palin for the top five. The natural tendency is everybody's like, well, Mitt Romney is next in line. We'll see. If I had to predict now, I'd probably say Romney. But, this is just a whole bunch of random people, you know?
Right.
They don't have somebody who's, like, clearly, you know, the leader right now. It's just all over the place. And all of these people have, you know, very significant negatives among certain parts of the population. You know, even within the Republican population, there's nobody that's like a clear favorite. And you know, some of these folks who are, and then you've got like all these poison pills, like Sarah Palin, who even if she was still popular in Republicans, you know, chance in a general election is like zilch. You know,
I mean that's the one thing that I see. I mean, it's just. You see this consistent group of people who have all these negatives, like even amongst them. I mean, let's take Romney for example.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, my God, Romney is going to get annihilated by everybody else on healthcare, and he's trying to try to neutralize it.
I don't see how he's
not going to get annihilated.
Well, and this is the whole problem the Republicans have right now in a lot of areas. I mean. You know, of all of these people we just talked about, Romney probably has the best shot in a general election. But like,
and he's going to get annihilated by his own party
in the primaries. Yeah, like,
yeah.
What's the path to a victory? Well, I'll tell you what the path to a victory is. It's the same one that McCain had, because we were talking about this 4 years ago with McCain. The Republicans didn't like McCain either. But they had a field of a whole bunch of people with a whole bunch of problems, none of which could, you know, get a significant bunch of people. And then in the end, you know, you had a bunch of Republicans basically hold their noses and say, okay, I guess we'll go with McCain. You know, that and that's the same path to victory Mitt Romney has. You know, he knows large portions of the Republican Party don't want him, but he's hoping that essentially, once it's absolutely clear that their own candidates can't win, they'll hold their nose and go for him anyway. And, you know, and we may see him doing the, you know, kind of stuff McCain did in terms of, you know, going even further to the right to try to, like, get these people on his side, show him. But, you know, he's going to have a hard time with that because he's already got this massive reputation for flip-flopping and saying whatever needs to be said in order to get votes. You know, so... We'll see. Pawlenty's interesting too. He's not as well known, you know. But he's also potentially a, you know, more mainstream candidate that could actually come through and win. All of these other people, just going through the list. I mean, Huckabee would have been very interesting. I think it's a shame he's not running. I mean, he wouldn't have won the general, I don't think. But you know, I remember. You know, 4 years ago, listening to a town hall or something he did, and being like, you know, I massively disagree with this man on many, many things, but he actually seems like, you know, he knows what he's talking about, and he thinks about things, and he's thoughtful, and, you know, he'll do what he really thinks is right. It may not be what I think is right, but, you know, he seems, you know, like a straightforward kind of guy. I think that would have been an interesting race, but he's out. But then we got Gingrich. You know, and he's got so many flaws. I mean, it's funny that he's actually running this time, because he's talked about running every single time since he was Speaker of the House, pretty much. And he's always decided not to in the end, but now he is. And you got to wonder what's really going on there. I mean, I don't know. You know, people have talked about his treatment of his various ex-wives, although just this week there, his daughter came out and said, you know, that thing that everybody's always said about him bringing the divorce papers to my mom while she was, you know, in the hospital for cancer. Yeah, I was there. It didn't happen. He brought us to visit, you know, whatever. You know, so. Yes, some things may have, yeah, he may get a bum rap on some things, but, you know, he still has the, you know, he's on his third wife now, and each one he started seeing the new one before he divorced the previous one. And, you know, in a family, family values based party that talks about how important that kind of stuff is, you'd think that would be a disqualifier. But, you know, the history we've seen is absolutely not. All they have to do is say they're sorry, and then they're, you know, no worries, you know. Then we got Sarah Palin, and you know, we all know about Sarah Palin. again, like,
she's a money-grubbing person. I mean, I've seen her do over the last 2 years is just to try to frickin' enrich herself out of this popularity, out of the fact that frickin' McCain put her as a running mate.
Yeah, and well,
I mean, that's all I've really seen this woman do.
I'll stick by my prediction from the beginning of the year. It was one of my New Year's predictions. She is not going to run.
I don't think she's going to run. I really don't as well. So, what about Santorum? I mean, really? I mean, this guy lost his frickin' Senate seat in a state that's relatively conservative, for God's sakes. Okay. And now he thinks that somehow he's going to do this miraculous resurrection to frickin' run for president. I mean, really? Did he just not have anything else to do?
Well, probably not. But all of 538's models have him at like a 1% chance of the nomination. So
exactly. I'm like, I mean, fuck. I mean, this guy must be bored.
And Gary Johnson, who we talked about, is at like, you know, 0.5% or between 0.5% and 1%. You know, and by the way, I should mention Trump. No way. Yeah, he's collapsing. It's not going to happen. He's probably not even going to officially run.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think he's just doing this for publicity, because the publicity feeds is the way that he makes money. Bottom line. I don't see that this guy fucking running either.
Although apparently it really hurt his the ratings on his reality show. It didn't help.
Well, I'm sure that he thought it would help.
Well, I saw one analysis that was actually very interesting. It had a little chart, and God, I'm going to forget where this is from, but it was kind of cool because it was talking about how Trump's ratings for his reality show had plummeted since he started doing his, you know, presidential talk, and specifically about all the birth certificate stuff. And it was a little chart that basically showed television shows based on the average political leanings of their viewers.
Okay.
And the interesting part of this graph, I mean, you know, there were some, you can imagine, oh, God, I wish I could find this chart quickly, but I know I can't. There are some shows that, you know, Republicans watch more than Democrats. There were some shows that Democrats watch more than Republicans. Mm-hmm. And you're thinking about the shows, you could probably guess a few of these. But the interesting one was Trump's reality show was the most Democrat-skewing television show on the chart.
Oh, my Lord. Are you serious? No yes. wonder his ratings have totally collapsed. He totally fucked himself.
Exactly. Now, I don't know why all these Democrats were watching The Apprentice, but, you know, apparently, you know, compared to like all kinds of other television shows that are on right now, this was the most Democrat skewing show out there.
So he basically fucking fucked himself. Okay. All right. Well, you know, I always thought that Donald Trump was not as smart a businessman as people gave him credit. I mean, if you look at his business ventures over the years, I mean, he's had one hell of an erratic record.
A little bit of a bumpy ride there.
I think a lot of the
there.
Money that he's made. What's that?
A little bumpy ride.
Yeah, and one of the things that I think he's made most of the money simply just out of name recognition and selling his name. There was an article this week on the New York Times about a number of people that bought condos that had his name on them, but that he didn't really – I mean, people had just paid him money in order to put their names on them. That's it. And a lot of people thought that, you know, if you read the marketing material, it sure as hell sounded like he was the developer. He was very active in the development. And then when the condos went south and they had problems, he just yanked his name off the property. And then, you know, that caused the property to drop in value. Because the Trump name on the condo had cachet, all of a sudden he goes, "Well, screw it! This thing is fucked. I'm toast. I'm ripping my name off the damn building," and then, you know, people are suing him because you sold us something, you know, this way, and now you fucked us.
You know, it's time for us to wrap up this topic. I just want to say one more thing: that this will once again be a year where political junkies like me are going to be going into this whole thing, crossing our fingers, and hoping for something really exciting, like a brokered convention where nobody has a majority, and they end up recruiting somebody who wasn't even running before the convention. You know, like suddenly Jeb Bush is the nominee or something. Yeah, this would be fun, you know? You know, the reality is the system is stacked these days to make that incredibly unlikely. You know, in the Republicans, they have winner-take-all primaries for the most part. Unlike the Democrats, where, you know, one candidate would get 40%, another would get 30%, and blah, blah, blah. On the Republican side, in a lot of these, it's winner-take-all. And with a winner-take-all model, you know, all Romney has to do is come in a couple percentage points ahead of whoever's second or whatever, and he runs away with it. You know, he doesn't have to win outright majorities everywhere. You know?
Right.
And so you can have a split field like this. And as long as whoever's the strongest candidate is strongest in many states, then you're going to get a winner. The only way you get, like, things really split up is when different candidates have different, you know, different parts of the country that they're really strong in. And we may see that, you know, flesh out yet. But, you know, the way things work also, I mean, you do the whole, if the same person wins Iowa and New Hampshire, you know, it might be over, you know? So, we'll see. With a field like this, it's really tempting to get really excited. And this is going to be like a knockdown drag out. And we're going to, like, you know, spend all year next year not knowing who the Republican nominee is. But chances are we'll know by February.
So, okay. All right. Well,
okay. Let's take a break. We took a long time on that. We'll be back. Flooding, Android sales, data breaches, and the war powers stuff. Okay. We'll be right back.
This is a break, oh yes, this is a break. This is a break, cause no one gave me any suggestions. I told you, I warned you. So this is a break, this is a wonderful break, a wonderful break. Yes, indeed, this is a break. This is a break in the middle of Curmudgeon's Corner. Yes, this is a break. Yes, yes, this is a break, 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 break. Yes, 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 this is a break. Yes, this is a break, 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 break. Yes, it is a break. And now the break is over.
Okay, and we're back. I think we would do a disservice for at least not mentioning some of the flooding going on with the Mississippi River. They just opened a bunch of spillways to basically divert the flooding away from New Orleans and Baton Rouge, but instead they're going to flood like the rest of the southern half of the state. I don't know that there's a lot to say about this other than, you know, those people, I mean, basically they had to make an interesting choice, which was, do we flood this area or do we flood that area? And they flooded the area with the least people, but,
right,
you know, but if you're one of those people, they made a conscious decision to flood you, you know, and that's gotta suck, you know, yeah, I've seen some interesting things too. Our article XKCD had some stuff about this. How apparently the natural course of the Mississippi River actually moves periodically, and you know, if nature was left to its own devices, it would probably move to where they are now diverting it rather than the traditional course through New Orleans. And basically, for the last, you know, 100, 150 years, the course of that river has been kept where it is through human intervention to keep it there. One of the interesting things is, yeah, this flood's probably not big enough to do it, but if you had a big enough flood that you diverted to this new route, it might not go back, which would have interesting implications. But, you know, it's all this, that whole area is it's just a massive amount of human engineering that determines what's going on there. It's because we've been trying to, you know, tame that river and make it go where we want it to rather than where it wants to go for, you know, like I said, over a century, maybe even over two centuries. I don't know. Interesting stuff going on there related to it, but obviously, you know, a human tragedy with you know, people getting flooded out. But Which brings up one other thing. I just wanted to, I'm sorry, stream of consciousness here. A few weeks ago, yep. I don't think we really talked about it here, but there was a massive tornado outbreak that killed hundreds of people.
Yes, it was.
Across yes, the South. Was. And
as a matter of fact, I'll tell you that I went to visit a customer on Thursday that had facilities like nearby were one of the areas that got really hard hit by the tornado. And they told me that the 10 of their employees lost their homes with everything. OK, during the tornado, I was like, oh, my God, I just didn't realize, you know, how impactful it was. But go ahead.
That's the thing. I had a number of people noticed and noted, including what was his name? I forget. Anyway, that you know, coverage of this of the tornado event and probably this flooding event are you know not proportionate. Like whenever there's a hurricane, you know, coming down the pipe, you know, there's massive wall to wall coverage of that event. And yeah, this thing killed
well,
more.
Well, that's because Florida is a. That's because Florida is important. I mean,
well, it doesn't. That mean, tornado. I mean, the hurricane doesn't even have to be coming to Florida.
Stop.
I know. I know.
I think you know,
these hit
no,
the
I,
South,
actually,
and nobody
I'll tell
cares
you.
About the South. But you know, the thing is, this killed more people than like the last dozen years of hurricanes in the United States, with the exception of Katrina, of course. You know, and so. One of the interesting facts I saw someone posted, you know, psychological study, which actually explains a lot in terms of how human beings process reports of death. It's like it's basically the human brain, when it hears about deaths, acts as if the number killed was the square of the number killed in the individual event. So basically what this means is like, you know, if you have one event that kills four people, your mind processes mm-hmm. it as if 16 people were killed, okay? Meanwhile, if four people are killed in four different individual events, your brain processes them as one each for like a total of four. So basically the more people are killed in one single event that you perceive as one event, the more importance the mind gives it. So like when you have something like 9/11 where 3,000 people were killed but all in one event, your mind, it's like millions were killed. Whereas if people are killed every day in car accidents, there may be you know tens of thousands of people killed over the course of a year, but your mind doesn't perceive it that way. It's perceived as a much smaller number, simply because they're individual events rather than one big event. Same thing with plane crashes. They're like, oh my God, you know, even though like, you know, a plane may crash and 300 people are killed. Meanwhile, other things are happening every day that kill many more people, but you don't perceive it the same way. It's just an interesting psychological thing, that I saw. And I think the tornadoes partially have to do with that. I mean, it was sort of a tornado storm that killed a whole lot of people at the same time. But there were individual tornadoes and individual houses hit and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, so people just – it's like – and it's also how spectacular you can see things right up front. Like with the hurricane, you've got days of buildup. You know it's coming and you see the thing and there are the satellite pictures and you got the people on the beach with the waves coming higher and blah, blah, blah. With the tornado, you know, you get like, you know, 30 minutes warning and maybe you get some after the fact pictures, but, and then it's done, you know, I don't know. It's all like, a psychology thing. Cause if you rationally looked at these things, we pay a lot of attention to the wrong things and not enough attention to other things. Anyway, sorry, tangent.
No, it's okay. But anyway, so bottom line is flooding, lots of it, water all over the place, damage big time, you know.
There you go. Good summary.
There you go.
So,
all right. So
to completely shift topics, you wanted to talk about Android tablets.
Well, yeah. Well, I found a news story recently where the head of NVIDIA was talking about poor sales of Android tablets versus the competition, basically, for the most part, Apple, obviously.
Yeah.
You know, him complaining about some of the reasons it had to do, you know, they're talking about a lot of reasons. You know, he talked about the marketing. He talked about the pricing. He talked about, I mean, he had like a bazillion different reasons. I don't know. I mean, what's your take right now on why, you know, competitor tablets, even like, you know, we had to just recently had the launch of the Playbook by BlackBerry, and soon we're also expecting HP to launch their own tablet. Why do you think that right now Apple's just blowing them away? Is it a marketing thing? Is it a pricing thing? Is it a combination of both? I mean, what's your take?
I think fundamentally, well, marketing obviously has a something to do with it. First mover advantage has something to do with it. Also, I think fundamentally, yeah, the rest haven't really gotten the change of mindset yet. Like, I mean, they're still like, you see some of the talk about some of these, and they're talking about, you know, processor speed and you know,
right,
and specs and things like that. And yeah, look, what this fundamentally is about is about it's not about the hardware. I mean, the hardware is necessary, and the hardware has to be good and cool. It's about the software. It's about making it, you know, a smooth experience. It's about making it something where, you know, a completely, totally non-technical person who hates computers can pick up the damn thing and be doing useful things in 10 seconds and can be downloading games and apps and things like that in 30 seconds, you know, and making it so that, you know, all of this is frictionless, you know, and, you know, from everything I've heard, you know, and I'll be completely honest. First of all, I don't even have an iPad. I've touched them a few times in the Apple store for a few seconds each. I have not even touched any of these Android tablets. I have no experience with them whatsoever, other than what I've read about them. But, you know, from my understanding, they're still clunky. They still have inconsistent UIs that, you know, do different things. They still take a little bit to figure out. Installing apps is a little bit more of the pain, a pain, but it's still okay. But there's not very many of them in comparison. And so all of these things together mean really the market for these things right now is if you can undercut in price the iPad significantly so that someone is like, you know, I can't afford an iPad, but this looks okay and it's a lot cheaper, then maybe one of these Android tablets is okay. But for the most part, they're not a lot cheaper. You know,
no, they're more expensive, actually. You know, few. That's been one of the things I've seen.
And so, where's the big plus? What? Where is the person who would look at it and say, "I want this instead, and I want to pay more for it"? You know, it's just not there. Now, this is not to say that any one of these companies or others who haven't entered the market yet might be able to do something that was actually good and actually a competitor, but so far, you know, the reason these things aren't selling is they suck.
Well, I will tell you this. There is one surprising, I guess, I don't know if to call it a tablet because they don't really advertise it as such, but yet it is an Android tablet that has actually sold a lot.
The Nook.
And it's actually the Nook. They, you know, they've sold 3 million of the Nook colors, okay? And, I mean, the price point is definitely, what you were saying.
And they've
significantly cheaper.
They've recently added, like, a mini little app store for it as well. And they, and it is jailbreakable. You can actually jailbreak the thing and turn it into a full-fledged Android tablet. Yeah, so, that's an interesting option. And they have the lower price point. You know, I mean, like, it's not marketed primarily as an Android tablet. It's marketed primarily as a reader, but it can do some of these things. So that it's an interesting take on the, you know, they're sort of doing it by not going against the iPad, you know?
Right.
So, because this is a software thing, it's not really a hardware thing. If you had somebody who got it, you know, they could turn around and put something out that actually was, you know, something that people would want to consider tomorrow. I mean, this could change overnight, but it hasn't so far.
That's right. So anyway, we'll see. I mean, it's going to be an interesting year. I mean, especially, you know, now that BlackBerry's jumping into the fray, I see Acer announcing one of their new tablets. I know that there's a new OS coming out from Google for the tablets as well, more specifically tailored. You're going to have the HP WebOS ones coming out, which I saw some of them, but a few people have had the preliminary reviews, as they say they are actually pretty cool. You know, so it's gonna be interesting. We'll just get to see more stuff. So more competition is better.
Yeah, and
that's
I mean,
all I say.
And yeah, no, absolutely. And I mean, and I think it'll get figured out. There will be competition here. There will be things that make a lot of sense. I mean, like, you've certainly seen that in the phone side of things. I mean, I'm an iPhone guy, but nobody can say that the Android options on phones just plain suck. You know, there's some good ones, people like them a lot. I mean, there are certainly problems on that side of things too. But, you know, they're good options, and from a pure numbers point of view, there are more Android phones out there than iPhones now, you know? So that will probably happen on the tablet side too. Now the question, you know, you may well still get the case where, you know, sort of Apple is the thought leader and the industry leader and the one that, like, sort of the cool kids have to have. But you know, Apple can still make a lot of money that way. You know, so.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
They don't have to be the number one in pure sales numbers in order to be very, very successful.
Yes.
Anyway, let's take a break. We'll be back talking about data breaches and war powers. So it is time for your poem of the week. Enjoy your poem, and we'll be back shortly.
This is the Curmudgeon's Corner Poem of the Week, brought to you by Notel Motel.
Media One Device by Anna Maria Hong. I'll tell you plainly, my dear, that my heart broke like a blade when the news hit me, and I know that word makes you stop short, so strange after all to see just the tip. They say the shadow self trails us for fathoms like a dirty tail. Ignore my mixed comparisons, I'm not my best. Yesterday you had me still, from now we will not exist. That will be odd, but so was happiness. I know it's destiny, the way I know the Argo is a blessed ship. It's just a fact, and just fantastic, the way my whole life has been, the power, the magic, and now the metaphors stop.
For more like this, go to notelmotel.org, with a new poet each week and a new poem every weekday.
And here we are. So, data breaches.
And here we are.
Yeah, and specifically, well, this was prompted by Sony, right? But there were others recently that we didn't talk about.
Well, yeah, I mean, the one thing is that, well, for over a month now, I guess has it been over a month? Yeah, So some hackers went and broke into the Sony PlayStation Network, okay? And pretty much, bottom line is that they have to shut the whole fucking thing down. And it's been shut down now. It's been about a month. The one thing is that they broke in and they managed to go in and, like, basically steal the entire credit card file of everybody who is in the frickin' PlayStation Network. Now, they keep saying that it's encrypted and they haven't seen people actually be able to take the credit card numbers and use them, but still, anyway, I mean, they pretty much could brought the whole freaking system down. Then the other thing that this week what happened was, I thought the one that was quite interesting was Michael Stores. They discovered that in a relatively large number of stores, some people had gone in and tampered with the pin pads at the point of sale checkouts. Okay. And so what they did with the tampering of the pin pads is that they were able to grab people's credit card information. But the Michaels one actually did result in a lot of credit cards all of a sudden being used fraudulently that were being captured through there. I mean,
excellent.
Yeah, that's the way that they actually – they didn't find the PIN pads broken
now,
and then,
was this,
you know, go
was
and,
this,
like, figure out.
Was this all over the country? Michaels is a national chain, right? Or
yeah,
was
it
localized
it was,
somewhere?
It was a large number of stores over a wide swath. Wide space. Let me pull up the number of stores that it happened. It was a significant number of stores. I mean, they went and they had about where the heck is it? You know, Michael's store is a close location through Oregon stores. Let's see, Illinois. Basically, a number. It wasn't all their stores, but it was certainly a large number. It was stores in a number of different locations.
Okay,
that they hit, and they picked up a large number of credit cards from the scam. So, I mean, it just, you know, I find it, you know. Look, most breaches, okay, in many places, you know, and people that wind up with giving up their credit card information or something or whatever, it happens because a guy fucked up, okay?
Usually.
It's not because the other guy was – yeah, because it's like, for example, how in the world did they tamper with all those PIN pads? I'm sure that some guy showed up at the store, oh, I'm here to service the PIN pads.
Now,
and I'm like,
now,
you know.
Let me ask here. Was this an insider at Michaels?
It doesn't appear like it. No.
Okay.
So, I mean, it does not appear. I mean, they don't know who it was right now. Okay. I mean, they're still investigating.
This goes towards, you know, a number. What was that? That email company that got hacked or whatever a month or so ago.
Yeah, it was recent. Yeah.
Like there were dozens of firms that used this company to send their marketing email, and you know, that had to send out little apology notes about, you know, your email address was stolen, nothing else, but you might get spam, essentially something along those
right.
lines. But it was social engineering there too. It was somebody, you know, I don't know what the specifics were of it, but it was somebody, the typical social engineering goes, somebody calling you up and telling you they're from the IT department and they need to check something on your account. What's your password? You know, that kind of thing, you know, and
yes,
and people will give it to them, you know,
people just freaking just fall for these damn things so often. Look, I'm not going to say that I may be perfect, but I have been attempted to be scammed a number of times. And almost every time that I've gotten the message or something or whatever, I always look at it, this looks like a scam. and then inevitably, like somebody else at the office or whatever falls for the damn thing. And I'm like, oh, for Christ's sakes, really? Are you just this gullible? And the answer is that 90% of the people, the answer is yes. So you've got, like, right now, I think it was out of their out of 7,800 PIN pads, I think they managed to tamper with like 700 to 800 of them. Okay, so I mean, just imagine that. I mean, you're talking about, I mean, you're just sitting there, you're just collecting. I mean, you're just raking in money. I mean, it's so easy. Oh, you have to move. I mean, so, but, I mean, I guess, you know, one of the things is that they said that, for example, we're talking about Sony specifically,
mm-hmm.
that it was a retaliation, I guess, for some legal action that Sony had taken against a guy who had made a way to crack the Sony PlayStation so it could do certain things that Sony had barred the PlayStation from doing, I guess.
Okay.
And they're saying that the group that went and, like, you know, basically went after Sony basically was doing this in order to retaliate for that action. They didn't say it was the person specifically, but there were people supportive of the guy. Yeah, but look at all the breaches that we've had over the last few months. My thing is that I don't understand, like, why, you know, even though one of the breaches obviously was to that, you remember, what's the company that does the two-factor authentication with the little active cards? Oh, what's their name? Whatever the name of the company is right now. I can't remember the name. But the bottom line, even they got breached, okay?
Right.
But I think that I don't understand why we still, for the most part, many companies and many places, we still go with this damn frickin' password bullshit authentication. We need to go to something else, okay? All right? I mean, it's just stupid that we do it this way. First of all, it's so many damn passwords in so many damn places. There's gotta be a frickin' way that we just you know. I mean, let me tell you something. They gave me at my company. They not all the systems are under a single sign-on authentication. So mm-hmm. I got all these frickin' applications with different sign-ons. Man, there is one system that I use seldom. Like, I only have to use it every 2 months. Every time I've had to log on in there, I've had to call the help desk to reset the password.
Yeah. No, okay? I'll tell you. I mean, the whole thing, you know, people tell you don't use the same password in multiple places. They tell you that the password can't be dictionary words and has to have capital and lowercase and symbols. You know, at my work, there are policies in place that they force you to change the password every 3 months, and it can't be the same as any password you've previously used. Blah, 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 blah. You know, and all of this stuff, you know, I mean, I'm amazed right now how many passwords I do remember on a regular basis.
Yeah,
you know?
I agree.
but at the same time, you know, I do reuse the same passwords in a bunch of different places. Because, I mean...
Well, because if you don't, then it happens like what's happening to me with that fucking system. I'm like, I keep using a different password because it forced me to do so for whatever the hell fucking reason, and I can never remember how to get in.
And then they have these password tools where you can have the system remember all your different passwords and even generate them automatically to be hard to remember, impossible to remember. And then you just use the one master password to get into this thing. I've never tried one of those, but I'm like, really? I mean, really? Is this where we are? I don't know. Like, and yes, there are certain passwords. Like, if somebody broke into, you know, one or two particular passwords I have, they would suddenly get access to all kinds of my crap. And
yep.
And that would probably suck, you know?
Yep.
But I don't know. I can't imagine. Like you said, there are places I don't log into all that often. If I made them some all completely unique passwords, then the only way I'd actually be able to keep track of them is either, like you said, I'd have to reset them every freaking time I wanted to use the site, or I'd have to write the damn things down and put them on a sticky note in my office or something, and that's no good either, you know? Yes, something better needs to come along, and the two-factor authentication isn't really the right thing either, because, like, I could just see having a separate one of those little dongles for every stupid website I visit. No. And I get really...
Well, no, but I don't want a separate... I don't want a
You want one.
I want some kind of, like... I want one dongle that has some authentication that I can use for different websites, okay?
Or, yeah. Right? And, you know, or biometric crap where the computer just knows it's you. You know, and you don't even have to worry about
something.
It. Yeah.
Yes.
Although people have pointed out, like, you know, if you got a fingerprint scanner on something, all you have to do is cut off the person's finger and you're in, you know?
Oh, yeah. So that's so easy, obviously. Yeah, nobody will notice that their finger's missing.
There are actually easier ways to get around fingerprint scanning, but, yeah. Anyway, but, I don't know what the solution is, but it's getting crazy. And I tell you, I get pissed also, like, all the websites that I now have where you have to do your login, your password, and then one or two security questions, you know.
Oh, gosh, and the frickin' security questions. And then, you know, then I hate the ones that don't allow me to pick the fucking security question because they ask me, like, what was the name of your favorite teacher? Oh, fuck, I don't know. Really? I'm like, who was the name of the girl you first kissed or something? And I'm like, oh, Lord. I'm like, I don't – I go through five different questions, and I'm like looking at any of them, and I'm like, I don't have a good answer for any of these. I mean, I could go right now, put down an answer, and then I'll fuck it up later.
The one I liked the best, although thankfully this is not too common yet, there was something I was signing up for or authenticating with. I forget what it was. It wasn't like a regular website I went to all the time. But it instead of asking me those kinds of questions that I'd previously told them the answer for, it wanted to compare my results with information it got from some public database. So it was like...
Oh, I got that. Yes.
So it was like something about the last car I owned or something. And it gave me, it was multiple choice, a list of four choices, none of which were cars I had ever owned in my life.
And you could say, I think one of the options is like none of these.
I didn't have a none of the above choice in my case. I could answer a different question instead. And so eventually I got a question that made sense. But like, it was like, I don't know where you're getting your information from, but none of these are, anyway.
Well, I will tell you that I've gotten that authentication, and I've been like surprised by the information they found. Like, for example, have you owned any one of these? And one of them was my boat. Okay. Right. And I'm like, shit. I mean, they got how the fuck did they know that I owned the boat? Where the fuck is it registered in the public record? I'm trying to remember that that I owned the boat. I mean, I think I do recall where the heck it is. The Coast Guard has a database that you can look up for those. And my boat was registered I had a Coast Guard registration, and I think that's where they pulled it from. But I was just like surprised all of a sudden. I'm like, what the heck? I'm like, okay. So, anyway,
data breaches. They're going to happen, and they're going to happen more often. And companies have to secure themselves, but at the same time, fundamentally, like, no matter how hard you secure yourself, you're still going to be subject to those psychological attacks, like we mentioned at the beginning. As long as you've got somebody, one of your employees, who's going to pick up the phone and accidentally give somebody access to something, you're never going to be able to completely stop that kind of stuff. So, I don't know. Get used to the new world. I mean, obviously, companies are going to do everything they can to avoid these things, but, every once in a while, something's going to happen. You sort of almost have to live these days with the assumption that any information you have is public or has the potential of being public. And so,
that is right.
If you're not happy with that idea, then, sorry, too bad. got to take a break, and we'll come back and try to do a relatively quick take on war powers, because I think we're almost at an hour. So here we go. We'll be right back.
Deck yourself with blue protection. La 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 la. Take the time for vaccination. La 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 la.
For the most accurate health information, visit www.cdc.gov or call 1-800-CDC-INFO 24/7.
And here we are. I just wanted to, this is a topic that it seems like, very few people are making a big deal out of right now. It's simply that, the president went into Libya using force, doing things that are acts of war. I mean, whether or not you agree with the justification that it's okay or that this was a good thing to get involved in, there are acts of war going on here. Congress has not been involved. The Constitution of the United States gives war powers to the Congress. More recently...
There's a Constitution?
I don't know. No one seems to care anymore. Even though this Congress, at least in the House, started out by reading it, except for the parts that were, you know, embarrassing. But anyway, more recently, in 1973, Congress passed the War Powers Act in reaction to a lot of what happened in Vietnam and sort of basically that gave restrictions saying that if the president has gone into military action without Congress, because they recognize that this sometimes has to happen in emergency situations, that let me read from the Wikipedia page real quick. The War Powers Resolution requires the president to notify Congress within 48 hours of committing armed forces to military action and forbids armed forces from remaining for more than 60 days with a further 30-day withdrawal period without an authorization of the use of military force or a declaration of war. The resolution was passed by two-thirds of Congress overriding a presidential veto. So this is the law of the land. It has not, you know, presidents ever since this was passed argue that this is unconstitutional. It has never been, you know, fully full. No, it has been invoked. It's never been fully tested. But yeah, most of the time people have, gotten out of it in one way or another. But what we have here, is it we're hitting six within the next couple of days after we're recording this, we hit 60 days, from the Libyan intervention. And not only has there not been anything going on in Congress, Congress has shown absolutely no interest in getting involved here. The Democrats don't want to step on the Democratic president. The Republicans, you know, are all for, in general, when their guy's in power, having, you know, extensive presidential power. So they're not interested. And in general, frankly, for, you know, ever since World War II, the Congress has wanted to get as far as possible away from anything, you know, foreign policy related, especially war making. They want the president right to take the heat on this. They don't want this authority. Now, the whole reason that Congress was given this authority in the first place was because the founders thought it was too dangerous to have the power of war and peace in the hands of one person. So they intentionally made it so that the process would be slower, that you had to go through Congress, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, in practice, Congress wants nothing to do with this. They don't want to make hard decisions. They don't want to have their necks on the line for making decisions like this. And so, you know, what we've got right now is absolutely nobody in Congress is jumping up and down, or maybe one or two people are, but certainly not any significant fraction are jumping up and down saying, excuse me, we have to, you know, we have to pass something on this in order to make, you know, the continuation of the Libyan involvement okay. You know, and the president's not going to them. Like, you had, you know, Bush and, you know, for his wars, went through the motions on this. You know, people have said it's basically at this point just a political choice by the president. The president can decide, as it is in his own political interest, to have Congress pass a resolution. And if so, he can go to Congress and have them pass a resolution. But, yeah, to me, this is all just very frustrating. Like, you know, I'm one of the few people out there who actually cares about process, you know, almost more than results. I care about making sure that the process used is the correct process, that the right people are involved, that the right people are making the decision, not just what is the final outcome in the end, but did you do it the right way? And this seems like this is absolutely a case where, you know, we have a war that we did not have to get into, that the case was never made to the public or the Congress. Congress has never been involved. I think this is, you know, a horrible precedent. I think Congress is being, you know, the fact that Congress has been, not just this time, but for decades now, flat out refusing to do its constitutional duty in these kinds of cases is just really sad. I don't know. I mean, because at this point...
You know, I think... You know, but what you highlight is a problem of, like, you know, how many freaking people just giving lip service to the Constitution. I mean, I'm with you. I mean, if there is a law or there is, I mean, there is something passed, then look, we need to sit up and enforce it. And if it's, look, so, okay, fine. They could have said war powers. People say, well, it's not constitutional. Okay, great. Well, Congress is mandated to follow this process. That is what the law says. They should go after the president in order to make sure that he follows it. And even if it has to go to the Supreme Court, it's decided that it's either constitutional or not. But we should just not ignore it, which is what's been done over the last frickin' 25 plus years.
Yeah, and I mean, and I said this actually when we went into Afghanistan. I remember saying, you know, if this isn't an appropriate time where we could have a formal declaration of war, what the hell is?
When is it? I agree.
And here we're not even talking about a formal declaration of war. We're talking, come on, at least, you know, Congress saying, okay, go ahead and use the military. It's cool, you know?
Right.
You know, and you know, the argument is, you know, our involvement isn't that great. We're just helping out NATO, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, whatever, bullshit, you know? We are involved in an armed conflict as a combatant. You know, it makes me very sad when I see, like, these kinds of things, because, you know, people poo-poo checks and balances, people poo-poo the filibuster, people, all of this kind of stuff. This was all put in place for very good reason, which is to slow things down and make sure that, you know, you have a wide variety of agreement on something before it happens. And yes, that makes it inconvenient if you are trying to get something done, but it makes it,
it is what it, it is.
It's protections that help guard against rash acts specifically by individuals. And so, like I said, I'm not even going to talk right now whether or not the Libyan intervention was the right thing to do. But I think it was definitely wrong for Obama to go about this on his own authority. This is an act of war. Congress should have been involved. And the fact that Congress is just like, it's okay, we don't want to be involved, that just, like, makes me so mad, you know?
I agree. I do agree with you on that respect.
Yeah, because this is exactly the kind of situation where, you know, the founders assumed that each branch of government would very jealously guard its own prerogatives and fight for them. So even if you had a Democratic a president and a Congress of different of the same party, Congress would still, you know, stop the president when they tried to do something that was Congress's prerogative. But that very much has not been the case. I mean, for, you know, the entire history of the country, you know, every few years, the president grabs some more powers and the Congress is like, oh, okay, he does that now, you know, and it's like, okay. And, you know, every once in a while you have something like Watergate and it gets pulled back a little bit, but it's only temporary. I don't know. Very frustrating. It's one of my pet peeves, but, you know, the writing's on the wall. Like, the only way this kind of stuff would ever be reversed is if Congress decided it was important and they wanted to, but Congress has no interest whatsoever. So we have an inevitable trend with the president becoming more and more powerful and the Congress becoming more and more vestigial. And yeah, that's not a good trend to have. I don't know.
All right.
And frankly, as much as people talk about activist courts, the courts don't really want to get involved in this kind of thing either. So, anyway, that's
it.
Well,
one thing is, well, the court doesn't remember something. The court doesn't get involved unless somebody goes and takes the action to do something. Well, and it's brought up to court, and well, nobody yeah. has.
No, but, well, actually, like, this kind of stuff has. People have brought this up before, but, you know, they've there are all kinds of places where it can get dismissed before it gets to the Supreme Court. And even when it gets to the Supreme Court, they have the right to decide not to hear it and
not to take the case.
But
I would say that, and
standing issues
going
that are very
against the president on something like this, that the court would take it. Okay. All right. Even if they didn't want to.
Yeah, potentially. There are a lot of cases, though, especially when it's president versus Congress, where the court has basically said this is a political matter. You two have to work it out amongst yourselves. But we'll see. But as long as no one has the as long as no one is like really strongly going after this, you know, an individual case here that like, you know, the question of who has standing in this kind of thing is interesting too. Like, you know, does a member of the military who's been ordered into this war have standing to sue based on the fact that it's an illegal order because Congress didn't approve? I don't know. Does an individual congressman have the ability to sue because they weren't involved? I don't know. These are part of the things that would have to be decided. But you know, for the most part, that what's happening is it isn't happening. Like Congress isn't fighting for its prerogatives. Yeah. You know? So anyway, I think we have a show. We're done. Thank you very much for joining us. This has been yet another edition of Curmudgeon's Corner. As usual, I'm at abblesmay@abblesmay.com. If anyone wants to send us questions, comments, thoughts, any of that. Otherwise, tell your friends to listen and tune in yourself next week. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.